Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Welcome, everybody, to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. It's another night of just guitars, and there's a bunch of guitars in the studio. My guest tonight is Luis Villegas. And he just came out with a new album called East Side Democracy. We're going to talk about that. He's also known as he's the other half of Heavy Metal, Heavy Mellow.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm spacing. But anyway, Heavy Mellow, which is a great group. They play heavy metal tunes in a flamenco classical style, and it's amazing. If check out their albums and what they're doing. Also, who I want to thank, he's in the studio right now, Jim Stubblefield, for putting this all together and introducing me to Luis. And thank also you. Too, we have another guitar player, Jose Garcia, who played on Luis's album, and we're going to talk a little bit about their interaction on there. But let me start out first. I'm going to play a clip that I edited together from his album. It's called Affirmation, and this clip, I think, will kind of, we're going to talk about it, and we'll break it down a little bit, but it's interesting. It kind of shows what Luis is trying to do, and I think it's really cool. Again, like we had with Dan Sistos and Jim and stuff, they're taking the classical and flamenco type guitars and the repertoire they're building from their influences, and we'll talk about that, and creating new music, which is making I think it's a good thing, because we're getting a bunch of new music in for these instruments, and a lot of players. There's a lot of exciting things that you can now do and stuff and play. So let's take a listen to Affirmation.
Thank you.
Luis, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Jeff.
Now, interesting cut, because he's doing a lot of really cool things in there. I mean, there's, first of all, I was listening to this thing when I was editing the clips, and I'm like, is that a wah-wah guitar in there? Like, that's really cool, and it works really well, the way you integrated it with the classical guitar. And then there's the synths. I mean, the whole arrangement has a nice, he's, again, integrating a jazz, funk, a little bit of rock in there, a little bit of prog with that bass line in that middle part. I mean, a little bit of everything, and I think that's kind of cool because you're, like, pulling from your influences. Let's talk a little bit about where you came from. You're from you were originally from East LA, which is another rich music. We've had, you know, the Delgado brothers on here, and a lot of famous luthiers, Candelas, and Bernardo Rico. I mean, it was a really, that's a very rich place, a musical mecca, so to speak.
Oh yeah, it's got a lot of bands and musicians that came out of the at least the 70s in East LA that defined a sound, and there have been books written on this sound. They used to call it the Brown Sound, and that was basically kind of guys that grew up in the 50s and 60s playing, you know, 50s type of R&B music, and you know, but with a little bit more of a rock feel. And you get bands like War, and you get bands like Tierra, and you get, you know, the closest mainstream band that kind of had that same sound would be Santana. It's, you know, it's a rock sound, but very heavy on the Latin percussion and Latin rhythms.
So tell us a little bit about your early influences, because you came from a rock background, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was born in L.A., so in my high school years, I was a child of the 80s, so I listened to a lot of rock and heavy metal from the 1980s, and the very first instrument that I wanted to play was an electric guitar. I wanted to be Eddie Van Halen and you know, and play Eruption, and so that was really what I wanted to do, and in fact, I joined several rock bands in my high school years, and that's really where I thought I was heading. Although, you know, your past comes back and meets you head on at one point in your life. And I think for me, that was my early 20s when I had been there, done that with the heavy rock bands. You know, I did the Sunset Strip and the whole deal in the 80s. But when I was about 21, when I could finally actually go into the clubs that I was playing at, I quit. I said, you know, that's enough of the rock. I want to explore different avenues, and I really sat down in earnest with a guitar and started listening to jazz players and blues players, and, you know, trying to get those tones on my guitar that I had at the time, and I had a family guitar that was in the house that I never really picked up because it was an acoustic guitar. It was a nylon string guitar, not a rock and roll guitar. But at least I had it there, and because I also heard music like Trio Los Panchos and flamenco music. At that time, in my early 20s, I was working at the Central Library in downtown Los Angeles. So I had access to a huge literal library of CDs, and so I checked out as many different styles of CDs that I could find, and I discovered, you know, people like Segovia, people like Paco de Lucia, George Benson, and so all that gave me a completely different view on the instrument that I had been playing all my life. And then you put into that even later the music that was in my home from when I was a kid. My dad was a huge classical music fan, so I also dabbled a little bit in classical guitar. And he was a big flamenco fan as well. I remember him, he had a great voice. He was a singer, not a professional singer, but he was very, very musically oriented. And I think that's his continual playing of music in the house is definitely...
So there was a lot of music.
Absolutely, yeah. Records. You know, physical records. I remember him playing Carmen, the opera Carmen, and just bunch of different stuff that I remember playing, and some of his friends were going to house parties. Then you'd hear stuff like Malo or Tierra or stuff like that, and, you know, and that was closer to rock. And this is when I was a little bit younger too, and I dug that stuff too. And so at this point, I did the whole Nuevo Flamenco thing in my mid 20s to early 30s, and I don't know. I'm supposed to still be in it, but I'm really kind of doing different things with the same guitar, with a nylon string guitar. But I'm just kind of I think at this point the people that have been doing it for a while are kind of taking it into a different direction. I think this new album is exactly that, like where I am, mm-hmm. where the band that I've been playing with really has kind of helped me get there. That song that you just played, Affirmation, that's a song that we have been playing in our set for years, mm-hmm. and just the whole the puzzle of us playing it together for years. David Garfield was the original producer of this album. He arranged this particular version of it. Chris Trujillo, who's my percussionist in the band, took over the production of this, and he's the one that said, you know what, if you want to get that sound, you're going to need a synth, a good old 70s synth in here. You're going to mm-hmm. need a clavichord. So we had, you know, mm-hmm. our piano player, mm-hmm. you can hear the clavichord in there, and of course wah-wah guitar. You just got to get that funky sound.
Yeah, well, I mean, it blends well. It really blends well together. And I want to mention now, I pulled clips specifically to talk about the guitars, but he's got a lot of cool stuff. There's brass, there's vocals, there's all sorts of stuff. The album's pretty diverse, and I think it's very cool because the guitar is still the core of it, and it's still there, and your sound, your playing, your style is very prominent in there, but it blends with all the stuff, and it's like, wow, that's kind of cool. You know, it's something you don't think of, like, wow, what did he do? Like, well, the Affirmation, it's a nice jazzy feel, but with all that stuff, it's kind of interesting how you put it all together. I haven't heard all of those things in that. I've heard a jazz type of mellow song, but with all the little things that you put in there, it's different. It is definitely unique to you.
That's good. I'm glad to hear you say that, because if nobody knows yet, I've been working on this record forever, and I've heard this particular version of this song forever, and you know, I haven't been able to put it out, so I'm completely don't know what it sounds like to people who have never heard it before.
So right, you're really close to it. I get it.
Yeah,
and really, there's a lot of this album is very. It's interesting because he goes in a lot of different directions, but it still kind of makes sense. It's not scattered or something like that. It's really together, and I like that. Again, taking the meat, you know, the idiom of classical guitar, maybe not strict flamenco, but flamenco classical, all the styles, and taking it somewhere else. To me, that was from being a product of the '60s. That's what it was all about. It's just like taking it and putting it, go somewhere else with it.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to play another clip, and this is with Jose and your bass player, Juan Carlos Portillo. And this is straight guitars and this bass. This is an amazing piece. I want to talk about how you guys put this together because it shows how together you guys are in tune to what you're doing, and you. And we'll explain that in a minute, mm-hmm. how you put this together, because this is pretty amazing. And but let me play this clip. It's called Evergreen. And the interplay between the guitars and the bass is just astounding. So let's take a listen to that, and then we'll talk about what you did there. Now, with that bass player, what he's doing against what you guys are doing with the guitar, it's just it, when I was we were talking about this before the show, and it's just he just you know you guys you're going in different directions, but it all makes sense. And then it's like, is he going to make one? Is he going to make, because he's just like playing against you guys. And let's talk a little bit how you put that together, because it's an amazing piece.
Well, you know, I think when I think about my music, I think it's very simple, and I've talked about this to you before. To by the way, Jose Garcia is here today,
yes,
as well, who played on the song, and he also sang on the album on a couple of other tracks. But anyway, I think of my music as very simple. I write a chord progression, and there's a melody that goes with it, and then the you know if somebody just looked at that music, they'd say, okay, that's a pretty simple simple melody. When you add the right musicians to it and have them look at the music and have them interpret it in the way they see fit, that's when the magic happens to me. And I think that's what I've done throughout my career is surround myself with the best musicians that I can find. I've played with so many different people, and some people, you know, mix a lot better with my style than others. And I think in this particular case, and this particular song, Jose and Juan Carlos fit exactly what was needed. And Juan Carlos's bass line is incredible. In the way he recorded that, nobody talked about what he was going to do. He didn't know. I bet he didn't know what he was going to do in the studio. You know, I knew my melody part, and I gave him the chord chart. And
so all he had was a chord chart.
All he had was a chord chart.
Okay.
And I'm sure we must have rehearsed it. I can only imagine that we had to have rehearsed it, but we probably didn't. I don't know.
Well, Jose, how did you approach? I mean, did you guys had played this before live? Did you know this, or you just went in the studio and did it?
I think I just went into the studio and did it. I was in the middle of recording my own album, and somewhere in between, Luis gave me a call and, hey, come on in and do, you know, some guitar parts. And I had the same feeling. You can tell Juan Carlos approached this track so organically, you know, and he's done it time and time again. He's amazing, and he just feels. And I also had that kind of approach to the song. I just had to feel, and then based on the feeling, you just.
When you track, did you guys track together, or did you overdub separately?
Separately.
Separately, and you still did the answer. And
you know, I think we were talking about this when Joe and I play together, we listen to each other. I listen to what he's doing, and he's listening to what I'm doing, and I think we give each other space to do what we each do, and I think that is exactly what happened in the studio. Although I had recorded my part already, he's listening to my part, and he's playing, you know, appropriately in or out or together where it needs to be. So I think he approached it the same way as when we play live.
Yeah.
I'm just amazing how tight it sounds as an overdub. I mean, it's just because he's playing against you. I mean, there's some lines where he's going do-do-do-do on the bass. Mm-hmm. He's going down, and he's playing against the meter. Mm-hmm. And it still works. And, I mean, that's hard to do in an overdub.
And that's, well, the bass and my lead guitar, the main guitar that you hear, I think both of those were recorded at the same time.
Okay.
Those were recorded at the same time. It was Joe's guitar that came in later, and the percussion was also overdubbed. If I'm not mistaken, no. I was going to say that we had drums on that originally, but no, we didn't. We never.
You
did.
Clicked it too. Yeah,
it was a click track.
And there's a piano in there as well, right?
Yeah, piano is also overdubbed, but it started out with my lead guitar and the bass tracked together, and that was the bass of the song. That was the rhythm track. But yeah, we tracked it to a click track.
Let's talk a little bit about what you use. What guitar did you use on there, and what did you use, Jose, on there, and how you mic'd it?
I used this guitar. It was the Germán Vázquez. It's classical. It's a cutaway, but it's a very sweet sound.
It's a very, very sweet sound. I remember when we were mixing this, there were two different sounds, especially on the solos, because I recorded Jose with a tube mic, and he was in a vocal booth, basically a vocal booth with a Rode NTK, if I'm not mistaken, which is a really nice warm tube mic. And you can hear it on the recording. It sounds really nice
very
and warm.
Sweet, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My guitar solo, on the other hand, was recorded in a room like this, which is very
much
very,
more live.
Much more live, and it was recorded with three microphones. Two, I think they were DPA. Is that? Am I saying that right? I think those are the letters DPA. Two DPA kind of pencil mics.
Mm-hmm. XY.
Like an X. Okay. And then there was a gigantic blue bottle tube mic about, I don't know, 3 feet away from me. Did it work? We thought it was going to work. when we did it, those DPA mics, I remember he said, were really super expensive. Of course, the baby bottle is a super expensive mic. I ended up, I think, just using one or the other. I don't remember which one it was. Mm-hmm. If it was the DPAs, but I took one away because I wanted to get a closer sound to Joe's guitar.
Yeah,
sound,
sometimes really those mics, the guitar sounds incredible by itself, but then in the mix, it gets there's too much information.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's too many faders to deal with. Like, okay, do I take this out or put it in? How much do I put in? I mean, there's a lot to think about, and you know that going in. But of course, once you're mixing, then you're like, well, I don't want that many choices. I just want, you know, like just one fader.
No, that's it's interesting because the sound is pretty homogenous between. You can hear the difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the tones that you guys are generating, because you're different players, but at the same time, it kind of it fits really well and blends. It blends really well. The mix is really nice. It's really open, and you can hear all the parts. It's very clear. There's a lot of air in there.
Cool.
Even though you got a lot of clapping.
It even reminds me, not in the sense of some of the stuff that I really love, what Vicente Amigo does with the flamenco guitar tonality, but with this beautiful kind of expansive jazz.
Mm.
You know, kind of situation. You know,
yeah, I really pictured it when I wrote it to be very sparse. In fact, I thought it was just going to be guitar and bass. And then we added a little bit of cajon into that build up section. And then I think it was Chris that said, you know, we need a ride cymbal. We need something to lift it up. And so we recorded a ride cymbal, and I think that really brought it up. And we had this interesting drum that Pete Corpella played. It's called, what is it called? It's just a frame drum. I think you can hear it on the thing.
Like a Boron or a tar?
He called it a frame drum.
Okay,
I'm not really sure. I don't know much about percussion, but it's a big round drum about this big. And what would that be?
It's about 15 inches.
And he doesn't hit it or anything. It's not played as a percussion instrument. He kind of rubbed his hand over it like this. And it's the shaker that you hear is not a shaker.
It's that
frame drum.
That's cool.
It's really
that's
cool
interesting. The only other one I've seen that where they rub is the talking drum.
Yeah. I've seen that
type of thing. Yeah, but that's an interesting sound.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to play another clip, and then I want to talk about. We were mentioning this before the show. Jim had mentioned your famous no pick technique, but I'm going to play another clip that has kind of the jazz feel that you were talking about. And then you do some interesting runs that you do at the end, and the way you double. And I notice, I think in this one, the clip is East Side. I think what you're doing is you're doing octaves, and it's an interesting sound. So let's play. This is East Side. Thank you.
That's what I call an edit. Just my guitar solo. If I could send that edit to the radio stations, because the song weighs in at 7 minutes.
Yes, it's a long
ten seconds, or something incredibly stupid like that. Yes, that's an excellent edit.
thank you. It's interesting because there's the brass, and you definitely the influence from that East Dillard.
There you
influence.
Go. Yeah, absolutely.
But listen to the guitar, the way the guitar cuts through. I mean, you have that really nice organ mm-hmm. going on in the background. Some really cool vintage.
And the horns.
Sounds. The horns are killer. And there's horns on a couple of the, some of the pieces. And it really works really well. Now, that guitar, which guitar were you using there?
Good question. I think that was the Maldonado, if I'm not mistaken.
Because it just cuts.
Yeah.
And were you using that same miking?
Yes, because I remember doing that guitar solo at that same studio.
And it sounds like possibly the no-pick was used on those fast runs
sure.
at the end.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. That's
well, let's talk about that. Grab your guitar, and also, too, we'll do a little thing. I want to talk a little bit about your interaction with Jose, and we can maybe have you guys play something. But what I wanted to say was that at the end, that wasn't the octave thing, but you're doing those double leads, which are really... The tracking on the
yeah,
just really
yeah.
cool.
Well, you know, that kind of comes from my rock and roll days. I remember hearing a lot of rock solos being doubled and harmonized and mm-hmm. really really cool fast licks, and so that's kind of that coming back as well. Randy Rhoads did a lot of that stuff, doubling his own guitar solos, and so anyway, that's oops, yes, thank you. That was the note pick. Technique, which I can't say that I came up with it. It was just kind of something out of necessity. I'm sure other people come up with it on their own. I started playing I played only with a pick at the very, very beginning. Mm-hmm. It was just even the Roz Guiados. It was all with. I don't have a pick right now, but I can't even play. It was all with a guitar pick and all the strum. With a pick, mm-hmm. and at one point, and I think I had already. In fact, that first album, my first Cafe Olé CD, was recorded all with a guitar pick. I still hadn't mm-hmm. developed my actual right hand, flamenco guitar techniques. So at one point, I said, I have to do this. I have to learn how to do the proper Roz Guiado. And so I, woodshed and did all the necessary homework to actually be able to do that. But now I had a dilemma. Now I have a guitar pick to do all the fast guitar solos that I like to do. But then I'd have to put it down, on my knee, or I hate putting it in my mouth because all the pictures that people take, you've got
like
this,
a little lizard or something.
Yeah, you've got this little thing sticking out of your mouth.
Or if the wind blows and the pick goes off your leg.
Yes.
It just happened to me.
So many things can go wrong.
Or you have to swallow the pick.
Now, most people that...
We have some people also that are listening that want a picture of the no pick. They want to see how you hold your hand, so...
Okay.
Let me get close. Let me do that right now. So,
I just should play.
So what he's doing, let me explain what's happening. Normally, people that I know that don't use, like Reggie Kotzen and stuff that don't use a pick,
right.
They use their thumb, their thumbnail is their basic one. Oh. Steven Stills does that a lot too. So in fact, when you were showing the rhythm playing that you were doing, you were using your thumb pick. That's when you showed how you used to play. And what he's doing is he's using his index finger. He has a long nail on his index finger, and that's what he uses to basically do those fast up and down strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing because he's getting a great. It's solid. And
well, once I started. Well, let me see. Let me go back a little bit. So it was a problem going from with your hand. And so guitar solo comes, and you have to retrieve your pick from your mouth or whatever, and then play, and so that was kind of troublesome. And then I'd forget picks, relentlessly forget picks. And I know Joe has been the receiver of the question.
I bring
just for him. Just for him.
And so at one point I said, okay, well, I have to kind of figure out how to do this, you know, just with my fingernail, because that's the most natural way for a player that has played with a pick to play without a pick. You know, I'm still essentially doing the same thing, but still using, but instead of using a pick, using my, mm-hmm. my fingernail. And I had already started growing the nails for all the rasgiato
right.
and whatnot.
Yeah, so, your nails are pretty long.
So, yeah.
Now, are you using any kind of acrylic or anything on there?
Yeah, acrylics. I have to go into the salon and...
Same
and
oh, so you have nails, the acrylic nails put on top of it.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you use anything to keep them smooth? Because I'm sure that, especially playing on the wound strings, I know for myself it just shreds my nails. Do you use any? What do you use to just a like a diamond deb, or do you use like a shell stone or something like that?
I use nothing. I go to the salon. They do them up. I make sure they're not too long, and then I don't do anything to them until they break or they've grown up.
No, and how long do they last?
Really? After about a week and a half or 2 weeks, I have to go back in.
Oh wow!
But I don't.
No, so, you know what? I have to say, Luis manages to pull it off. I did a show with him a couple years ago, and right before the show, he said, "Oh, I think I broke this nail," and I'm like, "Oh, what are you gonna do?" And he's like, "Ah, it's cool." It was like, "Wait, but you used that." That's your index finger. He's like, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah,
and he sounded amazing.
I'll figure it out. I have to figure it out. And you know what? I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but I don't think she's listening. The lady who does my nails is not very good. And I've been using her for like, you know, 10 years or so. But I've noticed that every time I use her, like I had to do my nail today because it broke. And I was just in there last week. They break a lot from her, and whenever she's not there, and I get like her sub or whatever, you know, somebody who's like not her, they're great. They last for 3 or 4 weeks without anything, and I just have to file them down a little bit, you know, because they grow so much. So anyway, Tina, I know you're not listening, but and if you are, I love you anyway. But yeah, so that's
oh, okay.
I do have acrylics put on, and anyway, I think there are other people that do this. So like I said, I'm not alone.
Oh no,
so,
and not just the style of guitar that you're playing. Jim Kimo West, he has acrylics on his.
Oh yeah,
for his sake, he does Hawaiian.
But I think you're really the first guy that I was aware of that used his index finger, holding his thumb against his index finger to create a guitar pick.
I remember doing this back in Lavallee, like when I was first starting to do it. It was back in the Lavallee days, which was
like 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
The closest I've ever seen that is a friend of mine. He, when he would forget his pick, he would use his thumb and index nail together, and that would give.
That's kind of like the Mark Knopfler thing, I think.
You know, where he'd have them pinched together so he could do the up and down, so it would fall against it, and he could go pretty fast, but never with just the one nail, because that's pretty interesting doing the upstrokes with that because it doesn't catch.
And Jose, you've adopted that now as well.
My story is pretty much the same.
And you don't have to bring picks for Luis anymore.
I still do, though.
He still does. He still does. It's a force of habit, I think.
Well, let's take a... I want to have you guys play together real quick. And we were talking about playing this one piece. I think it's going to be on... It's not on your album, but it's going to be on something else.
Oh, yeah. We're doing a... Joe and I, the rest of my band, are kind of backing up... lead singer for a rock band, a heavy metal band from the 80s called Great White. His name is Terry Luce, and we're doing kind of his backup band. We're doing an album for him. He wanted to do kind of an all rock album, but with Spanish guitar. So so we've been, you know, picking repertoire, and we actually had a private event that we performed in Las Vegas last week. So we rehearsed a bunch of songs. And one song that he wanted to do was Christopher Cross's Ride Like the Wind. So that's kind of something that we
This is an interesting rehearsed arrangement. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cut the voice mic so you just hear the two Audio-Technica mics. I have them set up in stereo so you can just hear it, because the sound of these guitars is just beautiful anyway, but you'll capture that. I don't want any extra. The sound of our voice mics makes it a little more, it's not as high fidelity. Okay. Here we go. You can take it off.
I can take this off, right?
Yeah, if you want.
Probably play better.
Okay, I'm going to cut the mics, and they're going to do Ride Like the Wind. And again, that interplay between you guys, it really works really well, how you guys sense each other and do that. Now, I just want to talk, we talked a little bit before the show, too, with Jose. I just wanted to mention, you had talked about your approach in playing, that you didn't want to do just like, you try to make it more interesting. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, sure.
The way you use chords and stuff like your approach.
You know, it's similar to what we were saying earlier with going in to record Evergreen. I'm a big fan of, I guess, chord voicings and alternate substitutions.
What was your influence?
I'm going to say, well, in this genre, I remember being a big fan of Earl Klugh in my early years, Jonathan Butler, George Benson, and most recently, I'm a huge fan of a flamenco guitarist named Josemi Carmona from Spain. And he does this to a completely different level, where he creates these big spaces with chords. He doesn't necessarily have to fill every part of the song, every second of the song with virtuosity, so to speak, but he creates these chords, and he'll use like two guitars to complete one chord.
So you break it out into two.
It's really interesting.
So you get a wider voicing.
And these huge spaces in between. I really love that openness, because playing with somebody like Luis listens so much to what's going on, and he plays lead according to what he's hearing at the moment, which is extraordinary. I find that it fits very well with what he does. So it's a constant listening, like you've been saying, listening, paying attention, and being ready to go to the direction that pops up at the moment. You know?
Yeah, I think that's how we do our live shows too. The music, of course, we've been playing a lot of these songs for a long time, but. You never know what's going to happen. We could, you know, double the chorus or triple the chorus or let's go back to the bridge. What? We've never done that before, but let's do that. And the entire band is in there. Everybody listens and performs at the drop of a hat, and
you intuitively know.
Yeah.
Now, Jose, do me a favor and demonstrate a little bit. Show us a little bit what you're talking about in your chord voicings. So get an idea what you're talking. Now, that's the standard bar chord. Now, what would you do? So you do a lot of voice leading.
Yeah.
Now, when you're breaking it out into two parts, are you opening the intervals? Are you opening out the, you know, spreading out the chord, or are you still using a tight voicing?
I think sometimes I do a little bit of both.
Okay.
I like to.
Sometimes you just hear that bottom end.
Yeah.
Sometimes it goes over you hear a top note that you weren't expecting to hear.
So play something that you would put on the low end, and then show us what you would put for the second part. I know we're not doing the same. Okay, so you'd have that as the second guitar right there. Okay.
Right.
And I noticed, too, also, too, in your playing, you bring out the inner lines a lot, too, that you, in your chording, you're using the inner, you're using a melodic line, whether the earlier you were playing the low note was the melody, and then you did a couple of things where you had the stuff on the high, you know, the high string, but in there, right there, you were doing some little voice leading that was in the middle notes, and that's... what I want to point out to everybody, too, is just how clear your articulation. That's not easy to get that to sound that distinctive where you can bring it out with the rest of the chords. It's an interesting... It's important to be able to bring out the melody but still have the chords. You're playing chords, but around...
But you see, that's what he does because the kind of voicing he's playing, like that last chord he was playing was a minor 7 sharp 5, I believe. And I mean, when you have those wider voicings, like piano voicings, because a lot of the standard guitar voicings, they're very closed, they're very close interval, but because Jose will play wider voicings, there's a lot of room for the melodic stuff, so there's not those stacking of intervals where it's so tight. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just open. It has an open sound, a lot of room for the lead work. It doesn't clash, at least that's how I hear it.
And it's full, but it gives room for whatever. And then if there's a second guitar like yourself, it's there's space there.
Yeah.
Myself, I remember in sessions I would double 12-string guitar and I would do simpler lines.
Mm-hmm, right.
And maybe just like root, fifth, and octave on one guitar, and then the other guitar would add some more harmonic content and mix together. They would mix it and it sounded like this huge 12-string.
Yeah, what I was hearing a lot there, I was hearing minor nines, which I love, and suspended chords, and just those nice open voicings where you can still hear, you know, the chord changes, but they're just more ambiguous, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, that I think also... The fact that they're really simple chords, you know, it's a A minor to a G, you know, and anybody else would play an A minor to a G, or maybe an A minor 7 to a G 7. Whenever we give any music to Joe, two chords sometimes become four chords.
It's very much like what Andy Summers would do with the Police. Because a lot of those songs, like Every Breath You Take, they're Ice Cream Changes, which are the mm-hmm. you know, Earth Angel.
Right.
But they add nine chords to all those chords. So all of a sudden, Every Breath You Take doesn't sound like 1950s Ice Cream Changes.
Right.
because, he's using,
you know, and that's why I hear Jose. It's doing that. It's just like it just opens things up.
Yeah, it's the type of substitute chords that you're putting in makes it more. That's your jazz influence, because
right.
it's just it you know, instead of 4-5, you might do a 2-5 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you get the you get that kind of progression. But it's interesting because both of you guys, even when you're playing, both of you guys on some of the stuff, I think Evergreen's a good example. You're doing voice leading too, but it's like counterpuntal voice leading. So this guitar. You know, Luis is playing this, and the guitar is moving here melodically, mm-hmm. and then Jose is doing this, and it's melodic, and it's against, and then you throw the bass in, and it's like, you know, it's like polyphony, you know, it's going and doing it. So it's a very, very interesting sound. And again, I can't stress enough to everybody out there, it's the key to us of all of both of you guys. And all of you guys, because you do it all, you guys are playing all the time, is that listening to everybody.
Yeah.
You got to really listen to the rest of the band to know where your spot is. And all the great people I've had on the show, like even the Delgado brothers, Joey Galdano, he was the master of fills, putting in fills around the voices mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But he listens, he's listening mm-hmm. to what's going on all the time. And knowing that, I mean, just what you did with Fly Like the Wind, I mean, the counterpoint there, that's...
And
that's
these guys have serious chops, but they don't feel they need to use them all mm-hmm. the time, which is also a real sign of maturity. It's like, you know, yeah, I can do all this crazy stuff on the guitar, but it's not always necessary to get the point across, you know?
But it's that interaction, and like you're saying, that makes something as complex as Evergreen work, because you know what to put in. So when it does, sometimes it's kind of cool to have everybody go for it. And what you do on there,
right.
and it works. So you know when and when not, and it you know, when you do it, it's calculated enough. Even though it's improvised, you know what to do to stay out of each other's way and still make it work. And I, to me, that Evergreen was that just blew me away. I mean, I just really what you guys had done there.
Awesome. Awesome.
Well, I told you it would go fast. We're out of time already. I do want to mention www.luisviegas.com, Jim's www.guitaraexotica.com, and Jose's www.josegarciamusic.com. Briefly, just go around the tables and tell me what's coming up. All of you guys, so that everybody knows what you're doing.
I'm just working on lots of different projects with Eric Hansen and my next solo project, Incendio's next stuff, and just busy.
Anywhere playing? You're playing coming up?
We're going to be going up to the only one that I can think of is we're going to be opening for Buena Vista Social Club up in Oregon in a little bit. So anyway, that's
okay. Nice. And Jose,
I have an album coming up. It's called Passages. I'm working on the artwork. So it's very, very ready.
And we're gonna have Jose on to talk about that when it comes out, hopefully pretty soon.
Yes, hopefully.
Luis?
And, of course, Eastside Democracy is just about out. Musically, it's finished. I'm kind of in the same position that the Jose is in. We're just working on the artwork, and it should be out with within the next few weeks for sure.
Okay.
And live, we have a gig coming up in San Francisco with my band. Heavy Mellow's got a cruise with all the heavy metal headbangers, the Monsters of Rock cruise in October 1st. And there's another Monsters of Rock cruise in February. And we've got this Terry E. Luce project, with the lead singer of Great White, with my band, and we're going to be in the studio within the next few weeks as well. And I that should be out by October. And rumor has it that we might be touring this in March.
That'd be great. Yes. Well, I'm going to leave us with a clip. This is another song that was, it was a nice long song. I actually cut a clip of it, and I'll let you say the name of it so I get the name right, the pronunciation right.
The name of the song is La Malinche. La Malinche is a indigenous woman back in the Cortez era, the conquistador era, who was actually fell in love with Cortez, and kind of aided in the destruction, I guess, of the the Aztecs, and this kind of is what ended up happening. Of course, was the interaction between the European Spaniard and the Mexican indigenous people, mm-hmm. the creation of a new kind of a race, the mestizo race, the Mexican American, I guess, Mexican European, and anyway, they nicknamed this the woman that had the affair with Cortez, La Malinche.
Okay, and this is an interesting clip, and there's some interesting stuff. There's a doubling, if I'm correct, with the guitar and the flute. Melodically. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So there's some really interesting stuff on here. Everybody have a great week. Jim, thanks again for introducing me to Luis, and thank you guys.
Thank you.
I look forward to having you guys back.
Thank you, Jeff.
We just scratched the surface on this. But anyway, this is Malinche, and everybody have a great week. We will see you next week.